All right, folks, it's been a while. Welcome back. Latest Mountain West Wire basketball podcast. Jeremy Moss here hanging out with Eli Betker, and neither of us are shirtless, I believe, right?
Yeah, no, I got my shirt on. I'm ready to go. But who knows about Moss?
I felt, watching the video, I know he's in front of a group of people in sort of a ballroom, but why did he not take his shirt off with the announcement of the Martin Schwinn's coming back?
I think he... Well, first off, he had a – I don't know if you read Chris Murray's article about it, but it sounded like he had a pretty hectic day and showed up an hour late or so to that event. And then he tried to get the Twins on the speakerphone and connect that to the microphone. So I don't know if people in the crowd actually heard what they said, but his reaction sure sent off quite the response from all the Nevada people there. So that was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. If we're wondering who this is here, MWR.com, that's the website. MWCWR, Facebook, Twitter. Check us out. We're talking hoops today. Also football. They already introduced you, Eli. Did I mention your name, Eli Betker? I will again if I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Going here. Double time. I like it.
Hey, that's it. We're busy time. Jeremy Moss here. Hoop show. It's been a while. So here's the game plan. We have so much to talk about. This obviously is going to be more than one show because we want to keep going by our March numbers. We want people to like basketball. And so we're going to talk basketball quite a bit. But this particular one, we'll probably do, what do you say, once a month possibly? Something like that?
Yeah, or something comes up that's worth talking about.
We'll probably have two in June because it's already June. We've got the draft coming up. We have some fun off-season stuff about scheduling we'll get to, maybe some ways to watch basketball games. And there'll be some random news, and we'll talk scheduling. And if you, Captain Obvious, John Rothstein, tweets out, scheduling is important to college basketball.
Thanks, John.
I put, like, all caps, breaking? Question mark? What? you're telling me St. Mary's should not have turned down Grand Canyon and Nevada last year. Is that what you're telling me, John?
Scheduling is important per source.
Oh, even better. Per source. And I love college basketball so much, I'm not going to criticize anybody going to the draft, or I will criticize people going to the draft.
Man, it's that time of year again where, I don't know, I'm starting to see all these commonalities between media members pop up. You see the secret scrimmages in October, and then you see people talking about guys that should be one and done or not, and everything. Oh man, we're just going through the carousel one more time.
Yeah, but here's what we're doing tonight. Whenever you listen to this, maybe it's morning, maybe it's on your drive, maybe work overnight, driving that forklift. Be careful if you are. Keep one earbud available to the surroundings. But here's what we're doing. Talking a little bit of draft stuff because three players came back. We're talking about, hey, updated rankings, maybe. But you made a good point. Our header stays the same for the next article if we update those. Well, maybe new photo, same team. So let's start with that because, well, here's the big news. Going through the day, what was it? May 30th was the deadline, correct?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there was about, two dozen total players. And the final three to come back were basically Jalen McDaniels, Cody Martin, and Caleb Martin. They're one of the final five, I think, that made the decision to return.
I know for a fact they were the final three. Ooh. There was one other guy from some small school that held out right towards the end. I'm not sure who that was, but he returned. So it did come down to Cody Martin, Caleb Martin, and Jalen McDaniels for the final three decisions. And fortunately for the conference, all three of them decided to return for 2019.
Yeah, I kept Jeff Goodman's Twitter on refresh every 10 seconds.
Oh, man. I couldn't even imagine what Nevada fans went through because that decision didn't happen until about an hour until the midnight Eastern deadline. So I had to wait all through decision day to finally figure out what the Martins planned to do.
It was also funny. Chris Murray put a tweet out, a screenshot of his phone. Even his mom was asking, any news?
Oh, I did see that. Yeah, that was good.
That's why he's like, sorry, Bob. Can't even, and I know nothing. After 12 o'clock, it's locked down.
Yeah.
So you get those two guys back. You get McDaniels, which I know McDaniels had about a half from San Diego State, for those who are wondering, going to be a sophomore, correct? Redshirt sophomore next year?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. He had, half a dozen workouts? I think he came to the Jazz at one point near me. I wish I could have gone, but I was not able to get down there. I think he did. But half a dozen workouts. I never heard much. Did Caleb or Cody have that many workouts?
They had a handful, yeah. So both of them got invited to the combine. Jalen McDaniels did not, though, and that was a bit of a surprise from most of the media guys because I think at least some believe that McDaniels could have had a better chance to be drafted than the Martin twins. But they both had a number of workouts. Jordan Caroline, who's also returning for his senior season, he had a handful of workouts as well.
And going through the reason they came back, I think they all made the right decision. Well, Dale, I think McDaniels for sure, because he wasn't expected to be drafted at all. Caleb and Cody Martin, maybe a second rounder, maybe. But here's the thing about Nevada, which we'll talk a lot about, because they're and also PSA, it's a Wolf Space Pack, not Wolfpack. The big,
the I haven't big seen a lot of those lately. Yeah,
and so remember NC State Wolfpack one word, Nevada Wolfpack two words. Also, it's not Nevada, it's Nevada.
Oh, man.
Get ready for that all year. And also, it's Oregon, not Oregon. Oh, geez. Even though it is Oregonian, which could confuse the people, maybe.
But I still think it's a valid excuse. But proceed.
But here's the, I could play both ways for them to come back or not, because they bring in all these transfers. We'll go over our top 10 list that you made recently about the eligible guys coming in for Nevada and the whole conference. Last year they played, what was it, 7-man roster, maybe 8 when that tight end got in for 2 seconds a game. It seemed like maybe a minute at the end of the half. So they go from super thin roster in playing time to, I don't know how many guys we're going to play, at some we can talk about later, but there's an argument to be made their draft stock wouldn't be higher because there's still only one basketball to go around, and now they have 5-star guy coming in, McDonald's All-Americans, guys who were scoring 15-plus points at their previous school, and now there's, I mean, like a half a dozen more guys coming in who knows how good they'll be.
That's what I was saying back in April regarding the Martins decision, because I thought that they would have both left, even though their draft stock did not indicate that they would be selected, even if it was in the late second round. And that's because of how much talent Nevada has coming in this following season. So they added a number of transfers. You can check out the top 10 transfer list, and it's basically Nevada supporting cast. Yeah. But they have nine players that averaged 13 or more points per game in their most recent season, and the rest of the entire conference combined has 6. So though the Martin twins will still get the bulk of the playing time and will both start, you won't see a guy like Jazz Johnson or Nisrae Zazua just sitting on the bench when they averaged 17-plus points per game in their most recent season. So in terms of NBA stock, I don't know if returning can really help out the Martins that much, but in the present and regarding what they do in Reno, I think this team is really shaping up to be one of the best teams that this conference has seen.
Yeah, let's go to that real quick. What, like, I've been around the league for probably, I'd safe say, a little bit longer than you, just basically because where lived, and I went to University of Utah, Mountain West, and stuff like that years ago. Covered BYU for a long time. Started this dang old website thing way too long ago to keep track. So this could be like people who are going, when's the best team? And the best two teams ever, my opinion, are that it's both coming the same year. I remember the game. I was joking because years ago, this is back in the two teams I'm referring to. It's the 2010-2011 season. San Diego State and BYU with Jimmer Fredette and Kawhi Leonard on each respective teams, and others, obviously. A lot more good players on each team. That was at a time when they were both top 10, went to Provo, like just when Jimmer Mania was going just insane, even though as of yesterday, I believe, or May 31st, he wants to get back in the NBA, playing in that basketball tournament, the TBT. But I was half joking because with Matt Norlander, I knew him a little bit. I started working with him. He had his College Hoops Journal site when he was still with Yahoo, kind of a side thing. And he's like, hey, I need some more people. I want to keep it running. I half joked to get me into that game. We never did. I was like, oh, I'm kidding, Matt. But I remember covering that game, at least for them, and the site I was working on here as well. But that game was just nuts. Two top 10 teams. Big problem. I still contend it's probably the biggest game ever for CBS Sports Network, football or basketball-wise, for how the Marriott Center is rocking full 22,000, whatever it holds, way too many for a college basketball arena, but it was packed to the gills. But that year, those teams were amazing. Because here's the weird, interesting thing. San Diego State lost twice that year, both to BYU, but then they beat BYU by 18 in the Mountain West Tournament in Vegas, and then they lose to UConn in the Sweet 16. That BYU team was 34-5. Shoot, I thought I had the record up here, but that's 2011-2012. Sorry, wrong roster here. They finished out. Like, could they lose? To lose to like New Mexico, who was really good that year. I remember the game where Jimmer Fredette hit up like a 50-footer against the Lobos. I think he scored 50 in that game, something ridiculous. But like, they were only losing to like New Mexico twice, who was really good. Lose to like UCLA in the Pac-10 at the time. And I remember, had Brandon Davies not got honor code issues for BYU, they would have been a Final Four team.
They sure would have been favored to do so. I'm just looking at reference page right now, and from mid-January on, both San Diego State and BYU were ranked in the top 10 of the AP poll, and even in the final poll, they finished 6th and 10th respectively. So though there aren't two teams in Mountain West that are that elite this year, Nevada could certainly contend with either of those teams. And would you give them the nod over San Diego State and BYU of 2011?
I don't know. Here's the BYU team really quick. Like, they almost beat Florida, lost in overtime, ended up being like a 9-point game. Or 11, yeah, 9-point game. Went to overtime, should have been closer. Had they won, they would have played Butler. And they would have been ranked. Who knows if they beat Butler, who was national runner-up. I think that was a Gordon Hayward team, or at least one of them. Where they beat Florida, they could have beat. I don't see why they couldn't beat Butler. Like, they almost made it to the Elite Eight without their second-best player. And, like, one of the best powered forwards in college basketball. Mm-hmm. If not for him getting on with his girlfriend or whatever it was at the time, they would have been farther along. But here's the interesting thing. Like, both these teams are way different. BYU was all Jimmer. I don't want to say it's all Jimmer Fredette at the time, but San Diego State wanted to be more athletic. And that was the time when San Diego State liked to score points. That's when they would go up and down. Clyde Leonard just crushed everybody at the whim. I forget who else they had, but I don't know, because if we look at Nevada, like I put in here on our sheet, all the new top 25 rankings, they're a consensus top 10 team. Like, they're probably every most common position from what I could tell is 6. Like, the Big Lead has them 4, KenPom 4, CBS 6, the Busting Bracket Send, the Dagger, Yahoo 6, ESPN 6, basically 6 is throughout. Here's the thing that I'm not sure I'll say that, because they have a half a dozen new guys coming into the team. How well will they gel together? How good will they be in the preseason or non-conference season? This isn't a team that's bringing back 10 players from last year. Yes, they bring back Jordan Carolina, who's coming back, who tested the waters, both Martin twins, a few other guys coming back, all these transfers coming in. But how quickly will they be able to get it together? That's the one thing where, yeah, they might be a preseason top 10, but I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they lose to, like, they open up with BYU, who's going to be a decent team, above average team, I'll say, probably top 125 team. They play, don't they also play Arizona State, Grand Canyon, aren't those a few of those other games they added on the schedule?
And also at Loyola Chicago.
Yeah.
Which could be a trap game, too.
MVC challenge, which is doing okay this year. But you get my point. Like, they might be top 10, but I wouldn't be surprised they lose a couple non-conference games because of, yeah, these guys redshirted last year, been around, but it's still, they're alive. But also, flip side, these guys last year were playing 36-plus minutes. If they're in there, like, the efficiency, like, per possession, per 40 minutes, whatever, both Martin guys and Caroline probably could be better in efficiency-wise because they're not having to play the entire game. But I'll say no at the moment because I want to see this team play. We saw what Kawhi Leonard did or Jimmer Fredette did, those guys did, and players coming back on the roster from the year prior. So I'm going to say maybe, but I'm not going to say for sure. I'll say this for sure. They will be the highest rated team ever in the preseason within the Mountain West.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think, like you said, it could take a little time to gel, and I don't mean that Nevada is going to come out of the gate losing a handful of games before conference play. But the thing that is good for Nevada, even though they have a number of new players coming in, is that, like you said, the redshirt year for plenty of these transfers, which Eric Musselman calls the development year. So a lot of these guys already have a familiarity with what the Nevada program is and what their plays are and their roles and everything like that. So there is a lot of new talent and things that need to be sorted out between now and the NCAA tournament, but I would not be surprised at all if Nevada ends up being the best team that this conference has ever seen. But like you said, I think that we'll have a better idea of how good Nevada is once January rolls around. But in terms of pure raw talent, I don't think that there's any question that this is the best team in the Mountain West history.
You think so? You're gonna say that?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Go ahead.
What would be considered the best team ever? Like, what would, when you look at those two? I still think those two teams are the best ever, and I could argue San Diego State being better because they beat. Or I don't know, it's tough to say. BYU beat them twice, regular season. But I think those are the two best teams ever. There are some good UNLV teams, Long Kruger back in the day. But what would make it for you to say this is going to be the best team ever? What would they have to make it to the Elite Eight? Because no team has done that in the conference. Well, I guess Nevada last year because they're that close to Final Four. Or no, wait, they lost Sweet 16, right? To Loyola?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, that's right. Sorry. What would it take for you to say this is the best team ever? Just an Elite Eight appearance, winning 32 games, go undefeated in conference play? Because I don't think any team has ever gone undefeated. I have to check. I think the best conference record ever was at go back 2011, 2012, where San Diego State lost two times, or no, BYU and San Diego State were both 14-2. So what? I'll just let you go. What would make it the best team ever for you?
It's always tough for me to use NCAA tournament wins as the barometer of success because just so many crazy things can happen in the tournament.
Yeah.
But the fact that the Mountain West hasn't really had that deep of an NCAA tournament run in its history, I think that opens the door for Nevada to be the best team ever. And even last year, opening up with two tough opponents, both power conference opponents, and coming from behind. And to get to the Sweet 16, which is already one of the best runs in Mountain West tournament history, I think that they can definitely build off of that now that they have more talent. But just from roster top to bottom, their second rotation includes four double-digit scorers, and so that second rotation that Nevada has could probably win the Mountain West by itself most years.
Ooh, that's a bold
So
statement. That's bold.
I would take Nevada's second rotation over, I don't know, Fresno State's 2016 team. I don't think that's too outlandish to say.
Well, that team was a 14 seed, wasn't it?
Right. So, I mean, a handful of years, you could see this Nevada second rotation beating the Mountain West top team. I would make that argument, yeah.
So, looking at their schedule for Nevada, really quick, they have BYU home and home. They have Grand Canyon. Is it Arizona State as well? Is that the other team?
Yes.
TCU as well? Is that correct?
I'm not so sure
I'm
about
just trying to
TCU.
pull it up here. I thought I had it in front of me. Ah, dang, I wish I did here. I was trying to look for one article we had a while back for the schedule, but their schedule's incrementally getting better than the past couple. Here it is. Like, okay, here's a handful of games. BYU home, Pacific, whatever, Arkansas, Little Rock. They got Tulsa in Las Vegas. Maybe UMass, Southern Illinois could be decent. Arizona State, South Dakota State, even though they lost their coach to Utah State and their best player. We'll see how that goes. But looking through who they play, like I know BYU's got like Uli Childs back. He's returning. That could be something where that could be it's at home, so probably should win. But like out of all those games, it's probably like maybe like the Arizona State game or Loyola Chicago game. Like they'll probably start off pretty good in non-conference play. Like they could go like 6-0, 7-0 before they play some decent teams like maybe UMass.
I don't expect Nevada to lose more than one or two games in non-conference play, and I think that they could make it through non-conference without losing a game. But
How good is Arizona State supposed to be? I don't expect them to
they
be
I think
world
they should be
beaters,
pretty
but
solid. Yeah, I think
okay.
they should be pretty solid. But I think what's nice about this Nevada schedule, they don't have opponents that necessarily pop off the page, but similar to what they did last year, they just have a bunch of decent opponents. They have winnable games at home, a little bit tougher teams on the road or on neutral sites that just continues to bump up RPI and strength of schedule. And that's why a team like Nevada, with really no other NCAA tournament locks within its conference, is able to pick up a single-digit seed. And I think we should be able to see the same thing this year, especially when their metrics should be off the charts as well. I think that they're fourth or fifth in KenPom preseason, so they don't really have to make up a ton of ground in those advanced metrics either.
So, looking at who they have played, like I don't want to make this all Nevada preseason type schedule or scheduling type of thing, but they're not like who's their team in the non-conference that's going to be like a their marquee victory? I know last year's Rhode Island opening night essentially. They don't like it's Arizona State. Like who's their best team? Could it be Grand Canyon?
I'd probably still lean Arizona State because their RPI will be good regardless since they play in the Pac-12 and they still have some decent players coming back. Probably their two best players or maybe even three best players are graduated. So, like I said, there's not one single team that is phenomenal that they're playing and their schedule is almost all but finalized. So it might be Grand Canyon, but I'd
Oh,
probably still
jeez.
lean Arizona State as their best opponent.
But what would that be? Top 150 game?
Grand Canyon?
Yeah.
I'd probably say top 100. I think they were somewhere around there last
It's
year.
still not looking good though, because they could run the, like not like you know my stuff what we've been saying about playing get those quadrant one wins I guess it's called, but it's like this schedule like I know their best game all year if it's not non-conference play, I guess it's San Diego State or New Mexico, and they'll probably just because who they play might be top 100, but they're not gonna have a top 25 win, and as people point out like. Novice basketball fans will say, "Well, this team's ranked fifth in the country. Why aren't they one or two seed? They get like a six seed." I'm wondering if that could be the case for Nevada this year.
Well, I'm looking back right now at Nevada's team sheet from this past year where their RPI was strong and their strength of schedule was also strong. So they're 13th in RPI, had a strength of schedule of 51 and 8th in non-conference. And their best non-conference game was against Texas Tech on the road, and that was the 18th best RPI. And then they also had Rhode Island and TCU, which were top 30 teams. So it's better than what I expected to be this upcoming season, but not by a ton. I don't think it by a ton that schedule is that much better. And then on the other side, the teams that they're playing that are weaker aren't as weak as some of the other teams that will contend for an NCAA tournament bids, because they usually structure their schedule to play teams that can compete for their regular season titles, even if it's a small conference, like they did last year. So they had very few terrible teams on their non-conference schedule. Only, let's see, Santa Clara was 264th in RPI last year, and that's the only non-conference game that was in that fourth column on the team sheet. The other teams were Colorado State, Air Force, San Jose State twice, and then it was Colorado State again as the worst opponent in the third column. So I still think that the bottom half of the Mountain West will do more damage to the RPI than what the non-conference slate will.
Even Pacific, it was 190 last year.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be better than the four worst teams in the Mountain West. I think it's very top heavy and weak in the bottom this
So
upcoming year.
who's sub 200? Like you mentioned, Air Force, San Jose State. You think CSU is going to be sub 200?
No, I do like CSU this year. I think Utah State, Wyoming, Air Force, and San Jose State will all finish 200th or worse.
Even with Justin James coming back, he'll score like 40 points a game.
Yeah, his supporting cast is terrible. If he wouldn't have returned, I don't think they would have had a single score, returning score over 7 points per game.
Let me ask you a hypothetical. Had he not returned, would you have put San Jose State ahead of Wyoming?
I might have thought about it.
Oh, man.
Yeah, they have one star and then a lot of question marks.
Okay.
So I still probably would have put Wyoming ahead of San Jose State, but
Good.
not by a ton.
I guess the other guy's coming back. Deshaun Taylor's pretty big for Fresno. That puts them. You had them, let's see, in our preseason. Not just you. I guess that was just you. I don't remember if it was a collaborative effort or not. You had Fresno at what, five? Four?
I had them fourth behind
Fourth.
San Jose State and New Mexico.
So he's back. That's a big deal because he's a guy who could be like when that a couple years ago where they had one player who would just score all the points and they got won the tournament. So we have the key players. Could anybody else we miss who's key coming back? Do we touch on everybody?
Yep. Yeah, that's it for the notable guys.
All right. Oh, Jordan Carolina, I think we mentioned as well. So, how does your ranking change for your top 10? I assume Nevada's still number one, New Mexico's still number two. Is it still the same top four? San Diego three, Fresno four, Boise five. Is
Still,
it?
yeah, still the same top four. The guys that came back, even if the Martin twins would have left, I still would have had Nevada in first place.
Okay.
And now that they do that, only solidifies them atop. And I did expect McDaniels and Taylor to return as well. So I'll keep the top four the same with Nevada first, then New Mexico second, San Jose State third, and Fresno State fourth.
Any other changes? Because you got Boise five, UNLV six. Those are all, I guess, the rest is staying the same because everybody's the same.
Well, I'm pretty sure there were some changes that have happened since, I mean, besides just the draft stuff, I think also some transfers have happened, which we can touch on briefly, but I'm sure I'll be doing some shuffling between now and October, but I'm liking Colorado State's roster more than I would have originally thought. So I'm thinking of Colorado State maybe as a top five team,
Oh,
but
interesting. Even losing Prentice Nixon?
yeah, I think so. they have some quality returning guys. Chris Martin decided to stick around.
That's right.
Same with Nico Carvacho, so that's really good. And as good as Prentice Nixon was in terms of efficiency, he continued to struggle offensively. So if they have a little bit more offensive fluidity, and especially under a coach who's not Larry Eustachy, that should be a problem, right?
Exactly. So really quick, when you did your top 10 before, was Kobe McEwen, was he – I know he's going to Marquette now. Was that before or after that's top the top 11 or the preseason rankings? Do you recall?
I'm pretty sure he had already announced that he was transferring. I know that he hadn't committed to Marquette yet. But even if he hadn't, I would assume that I had thought at the time.
Oh, you did. I see here now. Key losses. Would you drop them down at all? Like, would they swap them with Wyoming maybe?
I still like Utah State over Wyoming for now. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I don't know. It's
the bottom four teams in the conference next year are going to have a rough time, I think.
I think so too. But with Justin James back, and Wyoming's home court is still pretty big deal. I love the head coach is always with Wyoming, obviously very good. Alan Edwards. I don't know. I may put Wyoming over Utah State because if you have a guy who could score 30 points at will, almost, I was joking, 40 to 50, but he decent chance he could lead the Mountain West in scoring because Nevada will spread it out to too many players. New Mexico, I don't know if they have one guy who will score a bunch of points. When you look at maybe, I guess, Taylor for Fresno could be the other guy to challenge for the scoring title. But if they're going to be down in games, they need to keep the pace going. If they want to do that type of pace and be down, he'll need to put up shots. I might just swap those. I may not put them higher than 7 because, like I said, besides him, guys were scoring 5, 6, 7 points per game who were coming back. So I might make that flip because Utah State has no go-to guy, I don't think, really. I guess Sam Merrill, obviously, he could hit the three-pointer, but I don't know. I'd go with the guy who could score consistently over a three-point shooter guy, and yeah.
That's what I was going to mention is that with Utah State, you also have a really good scorer in Sam Merrill, but he doesn't create offensively nearly as much as Justin James does. So I think we've seen this a number of times recently with Wyoming. They have one stud and then a bunch of question marks. So like with Josh Adams, he would just tear it up, and his supporting cast wasn't nearly that good at the time, and they had a lot of underclassmen, and he scored, I think, well over 20 points. So we might be in for that again this year. Wyoming's going to have that star, and then you just never know what's going to happen with guys 2 through 5.
We'll see. Maybe Hunter Thompson will do something special for them.
Yeah, we'll see.
The basketball player, obviously, Hunter Thompson. I guess, let's see what else we got here. We got a few things. We were kind of bounced around a little bit. Let's go back to Nevada super quick, not to make it the Wolfpack show, but roster construction is an issue for them. They are now, I guess now, currently 14 scholarship players. They were at 15, but as you told me before, show Ehab Amin was going to be grad transfer eligible immediately from Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Decided to say, hold on, I'm out of here, probably because scholarship's not available and he's one of the few guys that could leave. They need one other player to be coerced or some sort of mention, hey, maybe you'd be better off to get playing time at school A, B, or C in the West Coast Conference, or how do you want to retire from basketball or something like that. It happens all the time when you see players transfer. It's not that you're being cut, but you're sort of being cut. They need to find room for one guy, and do you have any clue what that could entail, who that might be?
Usually you could be able to point out who it might be if the team wasn't constructed like Nevada's.
Mm-hmm.
Because
half the team transfers, right?
Yeah, that, and also your 10th best guy still averaged like 9 points per game. So
yeah,
the person that's leaving, in this case, it was Ahab Amin, who led the nation in steals and scored 16 points per game. That's just mind-boggling that guy is considered the odd man out on a roster. But going back to your question, I don't know, because you have Jalen Harris, who is sitting out this year. He's a Louisiana Tech transfer. He won't be playing in 2018-19. Maybe that could lead him to pursue other opportunities. I don't know. This is all conjecture. I have no idea what could potentially happen. Freshmen KJ Himes and Vince Lee are coming in this year, but
Jordan Brown as well.
I don't think Jordan Brown's going to go anywhere.
That's what I mean. I mean, he's a freshman coming in.
Yeah, he, another freshman coming in, right. So it's tough to tell. I'd be curious. I think with Amin, it wasn't too shocking because he had just committed a couple weeks ago, and he has other options, and I'm pretty sure he decided to commit to Nevada without the knowledge of what the Martin twins would do. But now that they're back, he didn't really have any other choice but to choose another team. So I'll be curious to find out who will be the other guy that decides to leave. And I have no idea how Musselman is handling this, because you're basically saying one of you guys can't be here next year. And that's pretty tough after you had offered commitment and a scholarship to your players. So I'm curious how it sorts out.
I'm wondering, we'd have to look at and see who's already graduated or who can graduate by summer's end. Because, like I said, you mentioned, sorry, I forget the name, but the guy, was it Louisiana Tech?
Jalen Harris.
Jalen Harris. So, like, if you already transferred once, transferring again means you lose eligibility. Like, you lose a year, another year. So they're not going to transfer. Odds are not going to, I should say. But I'd look for the guys. I don't know their academic status, but I would – I'm wondering if we don't hear anything soon. I'm wondering if it'll be later this summer, when guys, hey, I'm graduating in the first half of summer session, or I'll graduate before school starts in August. Then there could be a transfer, because there has to be something done, I'm assuming, before the fall semester begins. And mm-hmm. So I'd look for some guys going to graduate so he can play right away. I'm betting that's what's going to happen, but I don't know who that'll be, because I'm not sure. Like I said, I don't know who's on track to graduate, or. You know what I mean? I just don't know that information. So I'm thinking that would make the most sense, and it would be the least messy for a Musselman and everybody involved.
Yeah, I agree. I think with Jalen Harris, so, and I'll explain why I'm focusing on him in a sec, at least on verbal commits, and I just did a quick search, he is not signed with the university, though this could be incorrect, and verbal commits is an awesome source, but sometimes I mean, you have some cracks along the way, but if he isn't yet signed, then he would have the freedom to go and sign wherever else he wants, and he'd still have to sit out this upcoming year, but he would be eligible and wouldn't be forced into some other eligibility situation. So that maybe it's Jalen Harris. Yeah, so I don't know.
Well, if he hasn't officially signed, that'd make a lot of sense right there.
There is one source right here that says he signed. So I don't know if verbal commits has it updated or not, but if he isn't, then that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, we'll see. It could be him, like you mentioned. That's what, because also, as we noted, I think this was pre-show, if they're transfer coming in but not eligible, they still take up a spot in scholarship, which is why Nevada had like what, 8 players rosters last year, scholarship players available.
Yeah, and all the guys were sitting on the bench so they couldn't play.
Tapping in the tight end from football to come over to play for a couple minutes to play power forward occasionally. Season's going to be good. So let's go to this, because we still got plenty of time. We haven't talked all that long here. Only 30 minutes through. So let's go through the transfers out really quick, just so people are aware who's not coming back. We already mentioned a couple, but Prentice Nixon, CSU to Iowa State. Was that more to a coaching change, you think, with the new head coach coming in with Eustachy out?
I think so. Nixon was really close with Eustachy, at least from what most people could see. I'm sure we could ask Justin Michael and see what he'd have to say, but Nixon always stood up for Eustachy, so I think that once he left, Nixon had the opportunity to go to a power conference school, and that's where he ended up with Iowa State.
When I mentioned Kobe, they're going to Marquette. I guess, I don't know, because there's rumors, deep rumors last year, we're talking about somebody from Toronto, one of his affiliation with him, trying to shop him last year, and so that was kind of a sticky
and
situation.
Then he ends up transferring, yeah.
Going to Marquette. Well, also they have Craig Smith, new head coach. To Tim Duray's out, so that Marquette, I think he'll do good things. Marquette's in the – they used to be in
conference. They're in the Big East.
That's what I thought, because I remember Conference USA, Big East. That should be good for him. Ryan Wellage from San Jose State going to the Big East as well, Xavier. I'm just get out of town. Sorry, Spartans fans, but he had to get out of there. It's a terrible situation. And you got Keith Fisher, J.C. Helsman, more Spartans guys, Illinois State, so whatever. San Jose State losing more talent. I'm sorry again. I guess Bryson Williams, he's still undecided from Fresno, or is UTEP a real thing?
Still undecided, though there are a lot of rumors saying he could end up with UTEP following the Fresno State staff, Rodney Terry, and his guys down in El Paso. But he also I believe, took a visit this weekend with Oregon or has a visit upcoming with Oregon. So the allure of a power conference team should be pretty interesting for him as well.
We'll see how that goes. And then we already mentioned Ihab Amin. He's going somewhere. Texas A&M Corpus Christi, Nevada now kind of got the short straw, I guess. And I guess coming in here, you made your top 10 list. So one guy, I guess, a big deal, Malachi Flynn, going to be eligible next year, 2019-20. So that's probably – is that the biggest name coming in from this offseason?
So far, yes. Yeah,
like non-eligible player,
huge addition for San Diego State.
All right, so then let's go to your list. You explain the list because some people were not too happy with this list. List so people complain.
Happen, right?
If make a list, people will complain. That's how it goes. So what was your criteria for your top 10 eligible transfers for this year? What was your kind of baseline? They're going to be – I chose this guy number one because is it the best player, best fit? They're going to – tell people what was your basis beyond, because you can make a list about transfers and it can be four different categories and you get four different number ones.
True. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's what some other people mention. Hey, why is this guy not on here? So basically, these are just the best players, and that's roughly what it is. What have these players accomplished with their most recent team? So probably the most notable snub that people pointed out was Carlton Bragg, who's coming over after two power conference teams, actually. Kansas and Arizona State. He's now with New Mexico, but he didn't make the cut because he just really hasn't done much in his first couple of years of college. He averaged just around 4 points per game or so, and everyone else on this list averaged, I want to say, at least 8 points per game in their most recent season. So just what the players accomplished with their most recent team is my number one criteria. So Nisrae Zazua, who's from Bryant, he's with Nevada now, will be eligible this year at guard. An excellent shooter, probably going to average somewhere around 20 points per game, and that's what he accomplished back with Bryant. So not the biggest school name in Bryant, but just a tremendous player who was highly sought after as well. And in terms of other power conference guys, Jaquan Lyle from Ohio State, that the end of that relationship in Columbus wasn't too pretty, but he should do great things with the Lobos this year under Paul Weir. And then the other power conference guy is Vance Jackson at number 8 with New Mexico. He's coming over from UConn.
What do you mention about the guy from New Mexico? It's like, if you have two transfers, that's already a red flag as it is. I don't care how good you're regarded. I mean, like, yeah, he's at Kansas, Arizona State, but it's like, show me something. Like, he might be the best player to come in as a transfer, but it's also, this is a tough thing to do. It's because I saw people always bring up, well, competition. This guy came from Omaha or Old Dominion or Wagner. But you have a guy from UConn or New Mexico State who's they're a good program the past couple of years, or Bryant. So did you take that into account at all for a level of competition to coming in, or just kind of they dominated their level and they should be pretty good when they come to the Mountain West if it's a step up for them?
To answer your question, not really, because eventually I think the recruiting ratings and power conference affiliations have to start to fade. So with Carlton Bragg, though he might be one of the most talented players in the whole league this year, he just did not do much. And I would always take a low major or mid-major player who has succeeded over a player that has had a lack of success at a higher level. So people like to bring up competition, especially those that aren't all in on what Nevada has done. But we've already seen it with some current and former Nevada players who dominated at lower levels, went to Nevada and did just the same or even got better. So, I mean, you take a look at Jordan Caroline, who comes from Southern Illinois. That's not a huge school, and he could be a favorite for Mountain West Player of the Year this year. So I think I'm confident saying that level of competition is something that is probably more of a myth than a fact.
True. So with number 10, I mean, no longer on the list because he's not with Nevada, who'd be your next guy up?
It might be Bragg, and that's still more on potential than anything else, because if this is the right fit for him, then I think he could do great things. Another one to mention, probably going over to Colorado State with Chris Martin, who's from Oral Roberts. He's also a talented player. And also as a side note, because I saw some people mention this as well, this doesn't include any JUCO guys. We'll have a separate list for JUCO guys. So this is purely from players that played their most recent season on a D1 team.
Interesting. Okay, I didn't even realize that. So, hey, more content coming your way, folks.
There you go.
I guess one other piece of news we should mention, because speaking of JUCO guys, Boise State is losing Patrick Dembley after one day in Boise, Idaho. One day. Physical altercation in good old downtown Boise, Idaho, and now it's 2 a.m. Here's exactly what it is. He was involved in a fight in downtown Boise around 2 a.m. Sunday, as a recording, basically a day of today recording, after allegedly borrowing another man's cell phone and not returning it. Also cited for minor in consumption, I'm assuming alcohol, because if anything else, it'd be more illegal if it was marijuana or something. But so first day in town, so go to the bar, underage, get some alcohol, let's not return a phone, and get in a fight.
Come on, man. One Week in Vegas sounds like the name of an album of some sort. But anyways, Dembley is not living the dream right now. That's just a bizarre way to start off your time with a new university in a new city. I don't know what Rice's form of discipline will be, but I know that the most recent guy that was arrested, and obviously for something that was much more serious with Desmond Trent a few years ago, he was immediately kicked off the team. But this isn't nearly as serious, so I think...
Oh, I thought he was not on the team. I thought that was the case.
What's that?
I thought he was, like, booted already. Is that not the case?
I have not seen anything.
Oh, let me double check here. I thought maybe I misspoke here. I thought that was the case. For some reason, hey, one day in town you screw up. Maybe that's all it was. I, for some reason, thought he was kicked out of town. Oh, here's why I thought it was, because BJ Raines, who does stuff for the Idaho Press Tribune, mentioned, will this be the shortest career stay ever for a student athlete in Boise history?
24 hours.
Yeah, not even. Have to wonder if Leon Rice will keep him around. Police, we already mentioned, borrowed cell phone, didn't return it, got in a fight over it. He asked comment for Boise State from Leon Rice, but was told by his team spokesman that the earlier one-sentence statement will be it. Oh, did I read that one-sentence statement? Let's find out where it is. Here we go. A Boise State spokesman released the short statement. Boise State is aware of the situation and will handle appropriately per department policy. Is there a policy for underage drinking and getting a fight while still on the cell phone? What does that line up on the list?
I'm sure it can be lumped into something.
Do you think he'll be on the team?
I think so. Yeah. You think so? I think he'll be suspended, but Dembley could reasonably start for Boise State next year. I don't know if he will or if this will impact that to any extent, but I don't think he's going to be kicked off the team for this. It just sounds like it's as bad of a way as you could start a new relationship, but I don't know if stealing someone's phone and drinking at age 20 is enough to kick someone off the team.
And a fight.
That is true. Yeah.
Well, okay, sorry. Fight could be loosely termed, but it said physical altercation.
Denying
he had the phone but was in his pocket or in his possession, so
yeah, and not the best of nights for a 20-year-old in Boise.
We'll see what goes on. It's like, come on, dude, what, day one?
Yeah,
it's like,
and Rice and his staff won't tolerate that either, so
no, it's just stupid.
I would imagine he gets suspended. Yeah, just not smart at all.
So also, it doesn't say he had alcohol on hand, which, who knows how he got it, but potential fake ID involved, possibly, if he got his hand on some alcohol, maybe?
I don't know. Being a basketball player on Boise State in a relatively small city, I don't know how you're going to get away with that.
Boise's not that small. Come on.
I mean, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it's smaller than Salt Lake quite a bit, but still, it's like, it's just, first off, don't be dumb. It's like, we don't need to beat this guy down. It's like, it's a lot of people have drank when they're 20. It's like, okay, you're 21 coming up. Is it that big a deal? But getting in a fight, taking a phone, it's like, it just adds up. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, had he been caught stumbling, drinking, and passed out somewhere, it's like, okay, come on, buddy. What are you doing? But he's still a phone. Then you get in a fight. You deny you have the phone. It's like 1, 2, 3, and 4 equals something else. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's like, it just snowballs.
It snowballs. His mugshot's interesting, but if they lose him, would that change your rankings if he's not in the roster for your early preseason projections?
I don't know if it would change my rankings that much. I still think Boise State's probably going to be picked somewhere around the middle of the conference next year, but losing Dembley would hurt, at least from a depth perspective.
All right, let's get to some questions. So let's start with let's answer Cam's question. I know it's Cam Newton on Twitter, but that's not his real name. Or is it his real name? Do you know?
It is, yeah. But I know his ad is Morrison Crying. It has that crying right. Adam Morrison.
Mid-major, good buddies at Mid-Major Madness. I'll ask us, what is the absolute worst team in the Mountain West Conference?
Well, you have four candidates, at least I would say.
You do? I got one candidate.
I know where you're going with this.
Why not? San Jose State, that's the obvious question, or answer to the question. You lose your best starter, two other players transfer. You were already bad as it was last year. I know we should have played, we'd string it out and say, well, maybe it's CSU, maybe it's Air Force, but you can do that, but I'm going Spartans no matter what. You give me an answer, tell me why it's not them, I guess.
I mean, you're probably right. But I know that Air Force does not have the hottest roster in the conference either next year.
Remember, they go 20 deep but should go 5 at a time. They should play the hockey rotation, I'm telling you. 5 in, 5 out, every timeout.
I feel like we owe San Jose State at least one positive tidbit.
What is that?
Okay, well, they do add Michael Stedman, who's a pretty good JUCO transfer.
Okay.
He should be able to start or at least compete for some solid playing time. I'm going to struggle with this pronunciation a little bit. I think it's Samuel Jafet Mathias, who transfers from Wake Forest. He's sitting out this next year, but San Jose State has been bulking up their front court a little bit, and Jane Prelo's philosophy is all defensive and rebounding, so it's really no surprise that most of the guys he's added recently are big guys who can rebound and at least have a good amount of defensive effort. So you like to see some competition out of San Jose State, but I think you're right in saying that this team's probably the weakest in the conference.
Will they be better than last year?
I don't know, because losing your
that's
top
my
three
point.
Scorers,
that's why it's the
yeah.
obvious last place team.
Yeah, but Air Force is probably going to be worse than last year.
Okay.
Utah State and Wyoming surely are. It's just the bottom four of the Mountain West is going to be rough.
They are, but at least Utah State and Wyoming have a couple players.
Yeah, they do. But maybe one of these guys that didn't have much playing time last year can break out a little bit.
Hopefully, that's the plan. Just don't be – can we just have a goal of no sub-225 teams?
Well, I mean, that's probably not going to happen. if we're being honest,
250?
Yeah, maybe.
I know doing like the semi-daily post with the RPI and SOS and stuff. I think San Jose State and Air Force are on 270 most of the year.
How about we keep everyone within the top 250 of KenPom?
Sure, we'll go that. We'll bend backwards to make it look better than it could be or worse.
Which did not happen last year, but did happen in 2017. UNLV just snuck in at 248.
Oh, they were terrible that year.
Man.
Okay.
Well, we'll see.
Here we go. Over under Musselman shirtless must next year.
Can you set the over under? Because I know that last time I set an over under on this show, it was kind of a disaster.
Do we need to bring back BPI?
Do you remember that over under with Hayden Dalton? When we were trying to predict how many points he'd score over a two-game stretch.
Didn't you go super – I remember. What was your answer? I remember talking about it. I don't remember the result.
I had it around 60, I want to say, and I went over. I don't think he scored more than 45 points.
He had like 38 in one game and like 10 in the other, I think is what it was. He had one amazing game, one egg. Here's the thing. Okay, there's going to be zero regular season games he does this in.
Mm-hmm.
Unless they go we don't know their conference schedule yet, so it could be potentially clinching the regular season title. Maybe. That could be one. Winning the conference tournament for sure, too. And depending what expectations are high, because there's people saying Final Four, because right now they're a solid 22-1 from Bovada. I would have to say...
I thought you said Nevada.
No. No, I did not. Bovada, the gambling website. Come on, give me more credit than that. If they go to the NCAA tournament, going to the Sweet 16 could be one. Final Four would be one. Winning title would be one.
I don't think he'd go shirtless for a Sweet 16.
You don't think so, appearance?
Does it count? Does it have to be on the court? Because in the locker room, you never know.
I'll count locker room. They don't specify.
Oh, okay, then that adds at least a number of adds at least a handful, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and it might be a takeoff. I mean, not changing into a new T-shirt. like going from button up tie to a t-shirt say winning conference title. I mean, like ripping it off. Like he has to hang. Do we need to put a time frame at least 5 seconds without a t-shirt on to make it count?
Yeah, 5 seconds sounds good.
I think it's fair because you can change shirts quicker than that, right? If you're a title team, you're being quick about it and strutting around. So we might need to bring in the clock review with Jeff Grammer to get him involved here.
We could really use an undershirt sponsorship on this show, by the way.
Come on, Haynes, where are you at? Under Armour, come on, I'll take a form fitting.
If the regular season's undefeated, I think he would do that.
I would,
but
put,
otherwise, I don't think so in the regular season.
Here's the options: regular season, regular season one, conference
if undefeated, right?
In league play, in league play, I would say that league play would be bigger. I'm just whatever 16-0, whatever it may be. So it could be two or one there. Conference tournament could be another. Like I said, going to the Sweet 16, going to the Final Four, and winning five. I would say that's a lot. That's five, but I would say, if I want to get money going on, what could happen either way, if you want to actually put some – you can bet on anything nowadays, essentially. To make it interesting, I would have to say 2.5.
That's what I was thinking, because, 2 or 2.5.
Yeah, I wouldn't say – because – and if it's 2.5, where would you go?
I'd go under.
I would too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to see it every time there's a chance to do it, just to do it.
I don't know. I would. Someone's got to ask him what his frame of mind is when he decides to do that. Or maybe it's just not even a conscious decision.
Here's the thing. Just don't pull a what is it? Oh, what's his name? Steve Lavin, and wear a color. Here's the thing. Steve Lavin sweats like crazy. So Musselman, here's what I'm getting at, doubloon arms. Because he wear, or even Sean Miller, I guess, too, a little bit. But I remember Steve Lavin's like first game with UCLA.
Oh, man.
Sorry, people sweat more than others. It's hot. You're in a gym. It's smelly and stuff. But Musselman doesn't have that problem. So, see, that could be an extra factor to why he'd want to take his shirt off. But because
Sean Miller and Buzz Williams are as bad as it gets for that category, by the way.
Like, he wears dark shirts or, like, dark, like, blue shirts, sort of striped shirts sometimes on the sideline. But I don't know. 2.5, I'd take the under.
Going under, too.
I would love to see the over, though.
Yeah, that would – unless it gets – played out to a certain extent.
Can we just have him coach a game shirtless?
Oh my gosh.
Is that the required
memes,
for
Jeremy, the memes?
Health code reasoning? Does he have to have a shirt on indoors?
Oh man.
All right, let's go to the next question here. We should maybe save that for the end. All right, let's delete this one. Let's go to a more basketball related question. Who's going to be the next great point guard, or maybe not great, but replacing Jordan Johnson at UNLV?
I think you're probably looking at a transfer again because you have Noah Robotham coming in who most recently played with Akron, and he actually played alongside Antonio Jackson, who was the New Mexico point guard this last year. But Robotham has put up pretty good numbers in each of his first 3 years, averaging right around 9 points per game, 2 rebounds per game, and 3 assists per game. So I think he should be able to fit in pretty nicely with the Rebel offense. So it's nice for UNLV to count on these experienced guys, but like I've said countless times, they need to start having some roster continuity, which is just not something that they've had these last 5 years. So it could take a little time for Robotham to be comfortable within the offense, and maybe that's when Amari Hardy establishes himself a little bit more as a returning sophomore.
I'll go with your answer because I'm not too sure, but that makes sense. I know there's hype around him coming in, Jackson from Akron, a year and a half ago, whenever he made that decision. So, sure, I'll go with that.
it's tough with UNLV because they just haven't returned a ton of guys the last half decade.
And it's a point guard. That's hard to pick, too, a little bit, because that's the guy in charge. In charge of your offense. All right, so how will Mountain West RPIs the league compare to other conferences next season? What were they last year? Weren't they ninth last year in RPI?
Either ninth or eighth. I can't remember now.
Will they be better than the Atlantic 10 next year?
Yeah, I definitely think so. Yeah.
Here we go. Conference top 10. They're number 9. They're behind Missouri Valley and American. And then, obviously, Pac-12, Big 10, Big East, Big 12. Well, do you think they should be better than the Missouri Valley?
Yeah, I would say yes on the Missouri Valley.
What about the American?
American is going to be weaker this year, too. And but then again, the Mountain West, though they might have, like we said earlier, maybe they might have a top 10 team in Nevada, but that doesn't always equate to a top 10 RPI. So you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, look at, was it West Coast Conference? They were sitting mm-hmm. at behind the Colonial. And they had Gonzaga, who was mm-hmm. the, I guess, 22. When you look at the final RPI, they were 22. Or even American had Cincy 7, their 7th RPI team. I would say I think the best would be 6, but I don't think they'll be 6 because there's too many bad teams in the conference at the bottom. So probably 7, I'd say, would be the highest, I'm assuming, for next year.
I'd probably still say 8 and 9 range because it's probably a bit top heavy with New Mexico, San Jose State, and Nevada. But like we mentioned earlier, those bottom half teams will probably be in the 150 to 250 range in RPI, and that just completely hurts the whole conference's RPI. So yeah, we'll see. Probably 7 and 9 is fair.
Also, remember, even though Fresno should be pretty good, new head coach, CSU new head coach. Mm-hmm. And so that's an issue. When you look at really quick the American, what they did last year overall, they were 7, their worst team in RPI. See if I have it here. They had East Carolina and South Florida were 275 and 276. However, they had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 top 100 teams. And then Memphis is 108. And so I don't know what the Mountain West will have close to that next year. Like, even if they get like Nevada State, they are top 10. Because they finished 13 last year. Mountain West had just 3 top 100 teams, but they also had San Jose State 314, Air Force, CSU were 250, 235. So,
can I add one tag along question here since we're kind of on the same subject?
Go for it. We got time.
I have been seeing a number of things pop up on Twitter recently with like way too early predictions and rankings and all that.
Yeah.
And some people are saying that the top 3 teams out west, none of them could include a Pac-12 team. I phrased that terribly. But, like, the Pac-12 might not have one of the top 3 teams out west this upcoming season.
So, Gonzaga.
They certainly don't have anyone better than Gonzaga and Nevada.
Gonzaga, Nevada. Who's number 3 then?
Maybe San Diego State or New Mexico? Maybe BYU?
No. Do not say that. Not the case at all.
You're not on board?
No. And that.
BYU's not.
They got good. Yeah, Yulia Childs could be really good, but come on, they lose to like who is it, Pepperdine or bad West Coast Conference teams like 3 times a year. They think they're bigger than they are. Like, I don't know who the 3rd team would be. Maybe Arizona's always should be good. Like, they're a team that should be ranked high because they are still getting. Who is the guy coming in? Aiden. Who's the guy who allegedly was given 100K?
Oh, like, Aiden? But he's not returning, though.
That's right. He wasn't incoming. He was a freshman last year. Yeah, because looking at CBS and Gary Parrish, they got Gonzaga 5, Nevada 6, scrolling.
It's probably Oregon because they should be a top 20 team preseason, yeah.
Let's see. Oregon 17. UCLA's 18 just because. What do they consider West Coast? Rockies and West? So Pac-12, Mountain West, WAC, and WCC, and Big Sky? And I guess
yeah, probably just for the sake of Big top West 25 too. Talk, it's probably just Pac-12, WCC, and Mountain West.
I don't know.
It's probably Oregon, UCLA, or Arizona, but the fact that we're having this conversation is pretty interesting, I want to say.
So let me ask you this. I already know the answer, but the Mountain West won't be better than Pac-12 overall in RPI, will it?
No.
Just because?
The top 3 teams might be better than the Pac-12's top 3 teams, but then you have everyone else that gets helped out in the bottom half of the Pac-12 as opposed to the Mountain West.
I know we'll have more shows going forward, but let's wrap it up since we're now about an hour. We got Nevada far and away. Who's your is New Mexico your number 2 team? Because Lobos fans are hungry. Is that correct? You have them number 2?
Yes, I'm still with New Mexico, but you can definitely play San Diego State there and you'll have a great argument.
Do you fall in line with the Aztec fans who you probably already know your answer, I'm assuming, but just because they beat them twice, that they should be better than them, man. Just because?
There was a comment I had the other day that...
Pick one, said, right?
Oh, gosh, yeah, I don't know. sure, 2 wins out of 3 tries is nice, and San Jose State is they're the brand of the conference and everything, but just if you match up those 2 teams, I'd still go with Nevada. I mean, San Diego State could probably beat them at home again this year and maybe on a neutral site, but I still think Nevada's a better team.
All right. I just want to clear that out there. That's Eli Boettger, not me. No, I agree with you wholeheartedly on that.
Oh, tell me you don't agree.
No, I know. I can see the point of Aztec fans, but and they beat them when it counted. Or no, they didn't even play them in the tournament, did they? I forget how.
Yes, San Diego State hammered them in the tournament.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. We were there sitting next. Sorry, there's a lot of games we watched that weekend.
I will say this. I'll end on this. I think Nevada is the surefire favorite in the conference. Everyone will agree with that. But I don't think that the margin between Nevada and New Mexico and San Diego State is nearly as wide as people think.
And relative to preseason,
New Mexico and San Diego State could have spent. Yes, I think that New Mexico and San Diego State could spend a good amount or a good portion of the season receiving AP votes. So that doesn't mean that they'll be in the top 25 all year, but they should get some nods from media people.
You'd hope so. At least I assume I'm betting San Diego State before New Mexico, just because that makes more sense from what people pay attention to. Mm-hmm. But Lobos did make the tournament last year, the title game, I should say, did pretty well. Okay, so we'll wrap it up here. So next show we have the NBA draft coming up. We'll talk about that because you have Hutchinson, Chandler, should be a first-round pick. Looks like, should we just pen it into the Chicago Bulls and not do a show?
It would be cool if he ended up with the Bulls, but yeah, he's sure looking like a first-round pick.
So with him, we have, I guess the only other draftable guy, maybe Brandon McCoy, potentially.
Could be drafted. His stock has certainly hurt these last few months.
Lindsey Drew's not get picked, is he?
No, he's coming back to Nevada this year.
Whoops, sorry about that. I should know that. That's the other guy back. I thought he was gone. But we'll have some sort of NBA draft show in a couple weeks because the NBA draft is June 21st, so maybe the week before. And then we'll be back probably, I guess, July maybe to do some craziness just because that's what we do because it's July.
And, you also need to argue about 4th of July food, I would assume.
We do? Do we need to discuss it? We got Memorial Day just passed.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the same type of food as 4th of July food?
I don't think so.
Let me ask you this. You are out in the Pacific Northwest. I am from Texas, but now living in Utah. We'll talk about food next around July 4th, maybe the draft show, because with only one guy sure being drafted, we may not have a long show. Let's leave people on this. Eli, what's a barbecue to you?
The event?
What type of food? What do you consider a barbecue? Let me ask you this. Is cooking hamburgers and hot dogs considered a barbecue?
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. We'll end the show on that. We'll talk about it later because you're wrong.
Oh, no.
You're completely wrong,
oh,
sir.
Oh, no.
That'll be next time. We'll discuss that. So if you listen to the show, tell us what a barbecue is, what you think it is. So we'll talk about this later, but check us out.
Real meat, right?
Technically, I will find that. We'll actually find the definition, but we'll talk offline and prepare for the next show about this. But that's our hoop show for tonight. MWR.com, that's our website. Check us out. We're on TuneIn, Spreaker, Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, Apple Podcast. Where else are we at, Eli? Anywhere you get any more good podcasts can be sold, find us there. Tell a friend. ask your friend what your favorite barbecue food is or what a barbecue is. And we'll be back next time to talk some hoops. And also, real quick, we do have football stuff going on at the moment. So we have all of our team previews rolling out each and every week. And we do have our Patreon back going up a little bit. So if you want to check that out, patreon.com/MWCWire. You can get podcasts early and ad-free. So cool. Help us out. That'd be great. And until next time, we'll see you and talk some more Mountain West stuff later.